This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanksgiving is almost here, and if you're hosting the big meal, you've probably already got a shopping list a mile long. And I'll wager that for at least some of you, there's one particular dish that holds a lot of tradition. It may not even taste that good, objectively speaking, or be anywhere near on trend. I'm talking to you, green bean casserole and marshmallow-topped yams. But it's heavy with history and memories. Today, we're getting into the spirit of the annual Thanksgiving celebration with friends and family. We're going to talk about the dishes that make an appearance every year at our tables and hear the stories of our listeners who have very specific memories triggered by the flavors they return to on this holiday. We're also going to save room for you to tell us what you're trying out this year and what kinds of traditions you're making new with friends or loved ones. And you can offer some recipe advice for listeners out there who are just clamoring for some. And we'll get some advice from our guest today. So if you've got a story you'd like to share, send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net. And I'm joined now by Jim Romanoff, longtime food writer and food editor of the Vermont-based Eating Well magazine. Welcome back, Jim.
Thanks, Jean.
And Andrea Chessman, who's written many books on cooking and food. Her new book is called The Backyard Homestead Book of Kitchen Know-How, Field-to-Table Cooking Skills. It's nice to have you in the studio this time, Andrea.
Thank you, Jane.
And Maria-Lisa Calta is a food writer and the author of Barbarians at the Plate, Feeding and Taming the American Family, which seems pretty good for this holiday. Always a pleasure to have you with us, too, Maria-Lisa.
Thanks, Jane.
All right, so let me just ask you guys first, since you're the experts. I'm going to defer to you on this, since typically my husband and I have steak and broccoli on Thanksgiving when it's just the two of us. So what are you doing? Jim, you gave me the thumbs up, but are you prepping already for Thanksgiving?
I am not prepping for Thanksgiving. I'm not cooking Thanksgiving this year, although last year we did opt for a pot roast along the lines of your steak, just having had enough of turkey.
Yeah, so, well, and it takes a while. And if you're not cooking for a big group, it's like...
That was it last year. It was a small group, and a pot roast seemed perfect. And the rule in my immediate family was, as long as the sides were there, didn't matter what the main course was. So it was pot roast, stuffing, mashed potatoes, gravy.
So the protein is variable. It's the sides
protein,
for you.
At least in the immediate family group, it was this last year.
And this year?
Well, this year we're going to have a family meal at home after Thanksgiving, but making it really about family this year. We had a lot of schedules that made it hard for us all to get together. So we're eating out down in Montpelier. And it's to make it all so we could actually all be together rather than focus on just cooking the meal.
Andrea Chessman, what about for you? You've got all this book tour stuff you've got to work on, too. Do you have time for actual field-to-table cooking for Thanksgiving?
Well, Thanksgiving is always with family, and my family gathers in Ithaca. It's the center, and we always go where the most babies are, and that's why it's the most fun. But we have a pretty traditional meal, and I'm always in charge of vegetables.
So what are you bringing this year?
This year, it's butternut squash with caramelized apples, a pretty standard green bean, not a green bean casserole, I'm sorry. I'm going to make a broccoli and cauliflower bake with garlic crumbs. And that was a last-minute decision not to do the green beans. And I'll also do a green salad.
So why did you swap the green beans for the broccoli and cauliflower?
Because on Saturday, I'm making a Greek feast that will be all vegetarian and will include stewed green beans and spanakopita, scordelia, tzatziki. I think there's a few more dishes, but I can't remember them all.
That sounds wonderful. Is that a sort of a companion piece to Thanksgiving?
I find Thanksgiving meals very boring, and I get tired of it. So I usually volunteer to do the family meal that isn't the Thanksgiving meal.
We actually got a note from a listener who wrote in already and said, you know, if you're Italian, Thanksgiving starts with lasagna. That's what you got to have. So, you know, I think there are lots of different ethnic traditions that are brought into this, particularly American and Canadian, we should also say, meal that we have every year. Maria-Lisa, you, what are you up to this year?
Well, I think I'm the only traditionalist. I insist on turkey and am shocked, shocked, shocked that Jim and Jane do not cook turkey on Thanksgiving.
I'll let somebody else cook the turkey. I'll go somewhere else and cook turkey. I'm just not going to cook it myself.
But, you know, it's funny because somebody asked me yesterday, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? And I just looked at them and I said, oh, I don't know. I thought maybe I'd stuff a turkey. haven't really given any thought to it because it's the meal that kind of cooks itself. And I would argue that its boringness is its charm.
Why? Tell me more about that.
I think it's a kind of national comfort food day. And everybody has their own. A lot of people make, it was news to me, macaroni and cheese on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that was the first thing that sprung to mind when you said comfort food.
Yeah, but I think that the predictableness of it and the our familiarity is so appealing. And when my father died, neighbors had us over the night before the wake, I think. And they served us essentially Thanksgiving dinner. And I thought, what a great idea. Because we really weren't in the mood for, you know, pasta in squid ink or, you know, anything adventuresome. So I just think it's a, you know, kind of gives you a warm feeling.
What about that idea, though? You know, Jim was saying part of the reason for going out is to really be able to focus on the people that you're with. And isn't that one of the frequent complaints about Thanksgiving is that it can be so labor intensive? You either squabble with your family or you just, you know, whoever's in charge of the cooking is not even spending the time with people.
I think that's legitimate. And I think, you know, you just have to do as much stuff in advance as you can. And don't sweat it. I mean, there's really not much you can do to ruin it except ruin it, and then everybody will eat it anyway, and it'll be okay.
And then you've got the story.
Right, exactly.
Speaking of stories, listeners, if you want to share yours, please give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We're already getting people who are writing in and telling us about how food is tied in with their memories and their traditions. Haley in Winooski says, the food tradition that defines my family's Thanksgiving celebration is a side dish known only to us as pink stuff. We never knew the real name, if it ever had one. Pink stuff is made from cottage cheese, Cool Whip, and red Jell-O, plus chopped up apples and bananas. Sounds gross, right? No way, it's delicious. This is a dish my grandma, Ada Hildreth, made at Thanksgiving every year while I was growing up. This was such a staple that it never even occurred to me that other people didn't eat pink stuff at Thanksgiving until I celebrated the holiday with my boyfriend's family in high school. Although my grandma is no longer with us, this strange, sweet side dish continues to make an appearance at our Thanksgiving table, and I hope to continue my grandmother's tradition on for my future family. Pink stuff sounds good, Jim. You're smiling.
Well, it does. I mean, I think whatever works for your family. My family has always included a recipe by somebody that I'm sure Maria Lisa and Andrea know of, who ended up in Vermont, Franco Romagnoli, and they were his glazed onions. And over the years, we've modified the dish in different ways. I'm now, it's basically frozen pearl onions, butter, sugar, and a little vinegar. And you cook it down just right and get it to glaze. And now that I've been a Vermonter for 24 years, I make it with maple sugar. Sometimes a little hard cider will go in it or a Vermont cider vinegar. But basically, that's what we have to have. And we've showed up at other people's houses with them. They're like, oh, how interesting. Is it like creamed onions? Or I'm like, no, this is our family thing. So it's not quite as shock value as pink stuff, which I'm tempted to try. I hope you can put that on the VPR website.
Yeah, well, Haley from Winooski, if you have the recipe and you're willing to share, let us know. We'd love to know how to make it. It does sound interesting. We also got a note from Rebecca in Huntington who says, we'll share Thanksgiving this year with my husband's sister and family in upstate New York. She and her husband are gourmet cooks. I always worry about what I could contribute that could possibly live up to their standards. Thankfully, my brother-in-law knows Vermont cheese and was very clear in his request. Traps and Cabot. We spent quite a bit of money on these special cheeses, but I can now relax and enjoy the visit. But Andrea, in your new book, you teach people how to make cheese, which would seem to me to be almost even better. If you can bring your own cheese, that would really impress.
It's a lot of work.
So you probably can't start it today.
I don't think it's a casual thing. I think it's something to do if you have a lot of milk to use up.
So how do you do it if you've got the cows?
I think it's too complicated to just go quickly, but I would like to say that if you want to cut down on your work on Thanksgiving and the time involved, you should butterfly or spatchcock your turkey. And that just takes so much of the time out of it. So your house doesn't reek of cooking turkey for 8 hours. And very simply, what you do is you remove the backbone of the bird, which you might need a hacksaw to do, depending on the size and the age of the bird, and then flatten it out. You really press hard on the breast to break the breastbone. And then your bird is flat, and you cook it for 20 minutes at 425, and then you reduce the heat to 350, and you finish in about an hour and a half to 2 hours. But the important thing is to have a meat thermometer to be able to really judge when the turkey's done.
So if you're going to spatchcock the turkey,
isn't that a great word?
Yes, it's a fabulous word. If we could just use it many more times today, that would be wonderful. Then you have to sort of get over your idea of that idyllic Norman Rockwell picture that you have of the turkey coming to the table with that big plump breast just sort of spilling out over that beautiful dish. You're okay with that, I take it.
We have never done that in my family. It's always been carved in the kitchen because it's a messy business. And I always end up feeling like I want a shower more than I want dinner after carving a turkey. So actually the carving is much simpler. And it isn't unattractive. It's actually quite pretty. It's just flat.
Jim?
Well, I think Andrew is really onto something. One of the things that drives me crazy about a turkey is that its shape is just not conducive to cooking perfectly. And that's why there are all these techniques, you know, how do I get the breasts to come out moist and, you know, the legs to be moist, you know, the breasts not dry out. And part of the problem is the breast is cooked and done very quickly, and the legs take longer. So I like the idea. Spatchcocking sort of equalizes things by flattening the bird out. I've taken it apart and cooked the legs separately and cooked the breast separately. And we debated at the magazine every year. I was just asked this morning about spatchcocking, and I said, absolutely, and we should put it up on the website. We just don't do it in the magazine for just the reason you said it. Then you don't present, you know, the whole bird. The truth is cut it in the kitchen. It'll be cooked more perfectly.
So this is all lies. What you're going to see in Eating Well is this big, beautiful, round turkey. And all of you who work there are just spatchcocking the heck out of your turkey.
It's 3D printed. It's a 3D printed turkey. No.
I would just like to say once again, I'm shocked at this.
Uh-oh, Marie-Lisa is the traditionalist in the crowd.
Breaking with tradition, and I agree. It's not a good idea to carve the turkey at the table, but we always had to parade it around on a big cutting board before we hack it away.
Now, Marie-Lisa, though, here you are, you know, extolling the virtues of the traditional Thanksgiving, the turkey and all the sides, but you and I had a conversation just a couple years ago about how turkey may not have even been at the first Thanksgiving, which wasn't a Thanksgiving to begin with. And in fact, if you really want to be traditional about it, we should be having boiled lobster.
Exactly. Boiled lobster, probably duck, and venison would be the traditional things. And actually, I once was interviewing the people at Plymouth Plantation, and they did this great, from 1621, a sauce for duck that has ginger in it, and cumin, and currants, mace, bayberries, and claret wine.
And did you try it?
It's from a 1615 cookbook. No. But I just thought it was very inventive.
You did try some of the food, didn't you, for that traditional Thanksgiving? What worked for you?
None of it.
Really?
Well, you know, the palate was really different. They didn't have sugar. They didn't have flour.
Right. So there was no canned cranberry sauce
No pie. No crust. So they had a lot of boiled things with other seasonings. And I'm sure it's an acquired taste. And if I were a pilgrim, I probably would have acquired it.
And the pumpkin, again, it was not pumpkin pie. There was not a lot of sweetener around. So what did they do with pumpkin?
Well, there's a stewed pumpkin. Pompion is what they called it, from 1672. And it is chop up the pumpkin, stew it all day, and it said it will look like a baked apple. And then you put in butter, vinegar, and spice and ginger. I don't know what spice is, but ginger.
In my case, that would probably be lots of salt.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty good, actually. Yeah. Let's go to Sister Marianne, who's calling in from Berlin. Hi, Sister Marianne. Go ahead.
It's Lorian. I wanted to share with all what I learned from my mother. I think it's my civic duty to eat turkey on Thanksgiving, so I go to the delicatessen and I get a couple of slices of turkey, and that's how I do my duty.
And how does it taste to you? Does it taste like tradition now at this point?
Yes, it's just fine, and I can do the fun thing, which is to make the dressing, which is the part that I like best. But I do like not having to deal with the cooking part.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Sister Lorianne, thanks for calling in. Appreciate your call. And Tony is on the line with us from Burlington. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call. Thank you, folks. You know, I was reflecting. The reason I called, I was reflecting on the conversation that you were having about, you know, perhaps going out allows us that community with our friends and our family that we lose by being so immersed in the process of the cooking. And in particular, maybe one, that point person that's usually the one that's stuck in the kitchen and says, leave me alone, everybody get out of my way. And that's kind of always been me. It is for the last 17 or 18 years, I've been that person. But, you know, to me, and maybe it's just me, you know, there's a lot of drudgery in the day-to-day cooking and taking care of family and feeding kids and everybody and what will anybody eat and what do we make today. But it's a day that I can get so deeply into the process of cooking and reconnecting me with, you know, all the years gone by and all of the great Thanksgivings of my childhood, which maybe were three or four, I don't know, and an opportunity to serve, an opportunity to serve a lot of people big food. And I don't come from a big family, and because of that, and our families are getting smaller and they're spread out, big food is great. It's like a palette of like oil versus like painting by numbers.
Tony, that's a great way to think of it, and I love the images that you're creating there of cooking and having that feeling of cooking for a crowd and the joy that that can bring you, even if in the moment it is not always 100% joyful, because that is, for so many people, the essence of Thanksgiving is cooking that big meal, smelling the smells, hearing the sounds of the people in the house, even if you're not participating in those conversations. I appreciate you sharing that. We got a note from Moira who says, I adopted the Debbie Solomon suggestion from her Burlington Free Press column to cook the turkey, then take it out of the oven an hour before it's to be served. Cover it in foil and swaddle it in a quilt for an hour. This essentially steams the bird and results in a moist, delicious meat. She reprints this advice every year, and it has become a tradition in our house. We also asked on Facebook what dish completes your Thanksgiving table. For Shannon, it's mom's homemade rolls. Wendy says green goop, a pistachio pineapple pudding, and my pumpkin pie with its special ingredient. Green goop sounds like it would go well with the pink stuff. And Lonnie says ambrosia salad, which she says is her family's version of pink stuff. We also got this from Maggie in Brattleboro, who says, my father loved Jack Daniels and would put it into almost anything that he cooked. When I was a kid, I thought that scrambled eggs with Jack Daniels in them were disgusting. She does not say whether she still thinks those are disgusting. But Maggie does include a recipe, her dad's recipe, for sweet potatoes, which she says we still make every year and are delicious. It just includes cook and mash the sweet potatoes, then add diced apples, sautéed in butter, raisins, brown sugar or maple syrup to taste, Jack Daniels or whiskey to taste. Again, no measurement there. And a little bit more butter. And she says mix the ingredients together, bake uncovered at 350 until heated through. Happy Thanksgiving. Really? So no Jack Daniels in your eggs?
No, that sounds very appealing. And within the bounds of tradition. And I really appreciated the listener who said that eating turkey was her civic duty.
Yes.
Because it practically is. Even if it's sliced from the deli. All right.
More to come, more stories from you and more tips if you're looking for any. I mean, it's Monday. So Maria Lisa says she hasn't gotten started, but Andrea says if you're trying to do something like make your own cheese, you are way behind the curve. So Somewhere in the middle here, it's Monday. If you've got a question, please share it with us. Or you can add your stories to the mix. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your stories on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're joined by three people whose jobs it is to think about food and to think about how food is an elemental part of family, friendship, and good storytelling. Maria Lisa Calta is the author of Barbarians at the Plate, Feeding and Taming the American Family. Andrea Chessman's new book is The Backyard Homestead Book of Kitchen Know-How, Field-to-Table Cooking Skills. And Jim Romanoff is food editor of Eating Well magazine. They're sharing some of their tips for a delicious Thanksgiving meal. They're duking it out, whether we're going traditional or non-traditional, pot roast versus turkey, or heck, just go out to dinner and let somebody else do it for you. And we're also hearing favorite stories, favorite side dishes that you have that really make the Thanksgiving feast the thing of memories. Call and tell us why even the most questionable side dishes, I mean really green goop and pink stuff, still hold a place of honor in your household because of the memories the flavors hold for you. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We have a question from Chris who says, what about sauerkraut? My former in-laws always served sauerkraut. Where did that come from? Jim, you know?
Well, I'm not sure, you know, necessarily where it came from in his family. It would be, you know, the perfect thing for the time of year where everybody would have finished up their season and taken their cabbage and fermented it. I think a fall harvest, it would be perfect by Thanksgiving. And sauerkraut and turkey, I'm one of those people who find turkey a little boring, but take turkey the next day, put some sauerkraut on it, bake it, maybe some layers of turkey, sauerkraut, if you might have had a ham, maybe a slice of ham in there, make like a chucrut. That sounds delicious.
I'll one-up you, Jim. I'd go kimchi.
Kimchi.
The turkey,
that is awesome.
Kimchi,
absolutely.
And then make it a really good grilled cheese, so the kind where you put the butter on the outside of the bread and then you just fry it in your frying pan. That's a leftover lunch.
You're hired,
for me.
Okay. Jane. You're coming
okay,
down.
But if you're going to do sauerkraut, add the cranberry sauce.
I agree.
And in fact, I think the main reason for doing turkeys on Thanksgiving is actually the leftovers the next day.
I bet, Andrea, you're not going to get any argument here, actually, from either of the people at this table that, or I guess there are three of us, if I include myself, that really that is the best part, isn't it? But is it just because you don't have to cook again, or is it something about those flavors having a day and then combining them in a different way for you?
I think it's all of the above. And I also think that if you get a real farm-raised turkey that hasn't been overly processed or held at 26 degrees, which is supposedly not freezing it, you get a really, really moist turkey with tons of gravy. And then you have meals and meals and meals of turkey pot pie to portion out and set aside for quick dinners later in the winter.
And, of course, turkey soup if you want to save your bones.
And turkey soup.
So, Andrea, your book is not a Thanksgiving book, but this is a sort of a homesteading book and how you can really go from start to finish with the process. How do you apply that to Thanksgiving? Do you do the whole field-to-table shtick for Thanksgiving?
For a number of years, I had neighbors who raised turkeys, just 12 or 15 of them. We all helped with the slaughter and the getting it ready for cooking, and those were the best turkeys I have ever had, and I'm very sorry that they're no longer doing it. But when I do a Thanksgiving dinner, it's really a lot about trying to get it more seasonal. So my cranberry relish is actually a relish I make with onions that are the soft-necked, the onions that aren't good for long-term storage. And then I make a cranberry orange relish and can that. And that is great on the leftover sandwiches.
Oh, that sounds fabulous.
And I do one of the vegetables I'll do is winter squash. And I like to keep it seasonal.
We have a note from Laura, who's a farmer, and she says, we've been so delighted with the ease of roasting any size, yes, 15 to 32 pounds, of our pasture-raised turkey. They're always done in less than 3 hours, not stuffed. Perhaps the local pasture-raised turkey is just an entirely different, more enjoyable experience from cooking to eating. And let us reflect back on a season of sunshine and abundance in our green mountains. We were talking about sauerkraut earlier. Let's go to Molly, who's calling in from Williston. Hi, Molly. Go right ahead.
Hi, just want to say how great this show is. I love just sitting around talking about food with all these people who know so much about it. But I just wanted to add on the sauerkraut. My in-laws, when I first went, there was sauerkraut on the table. I thought it was the weirdest thing in the world. And now, 25 years later, I can't imagine Thanksgiving without it. And they're from the Baltimore, so it's a mid-Atlantic tradition.
Oh, so it didn't come from a particular ethnic tradition, just from sort of a mid-Atlantic American tradition?
I'm sure there's some Eastern European roots in it, but the Germanic roots as well, but it's, yeah.
And do you have it every Thanksgiving now?
We do. My sister-in-law makes it, and I can't imagine Thanksgiving without it.
Now, I just have to ask, is this Molly Stevens?
Of course it is.
Of course it is. See, we've got another fabulous food writer to add to the mix. Yeah, you can't be anonymous in this conversation. Molly, thanks for calling in. We appreciate your input.
I love it.
We are talking about food. If you're a food writer or just a food eater, and I think that would probably encompass almost all of us, you can call with your Thanksgiving memories, your traditions, what really says Thanksgiving to you. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. All right, so we're talking about the food, we're talking about what we eat, we're talking about some of the memories, and none of the three of you have mentioned a specific dish that really evokes a memory for you. Are there any that you feel like are just really powerful, not for the food that they are, but for the memories they bring? Or is Thanksgiving for you something that's a little bit more fluid?
Well, I would say it isn't one particular dish, you know, that it really is about the family gatherings. So the stories that come to mind or the memories are playing games after the meal, which with my wife's family, it's something I didn't grow up doing, but I look forward to now. We play games for hours and hours, and there are dishes that come to mind, but not necessarily for the dish itself, but for, you know, how it was cooked that day and what people said about it or whether it ended up on someone rather than in them, that type of thing.
For me, it's my grandmother has always made, and now sometimes one of the other aunts or uncles or parent will make it, but always makes a mince pie, which nobody in the family likes except for my uncle. And the reason that this has become a tradition is because it fuels the fire for the idea that of her three children, my grandmother prefers my uncle. And so she'll make the mince pie even though nobody else in the family wants it, just so he can have his mince pie as the baby and the boy of the family.
We have a mince pie holiday tradition as well.
See, maybe it's
and,
about mince.
And it's my mother-in-law makes it, and nobody eats it. Nobody likes it. I shouldn't say that. They're people will taste it and occasionally like it. But it's also often called fly cemetery because that's how strongly people feel about mince pie. And she makes it to taunt everyone.
Yeah, you
and that's
have
part
something
of the,
like that.
The holiday joy, taunting your children.
Do you either of you taunt your children or your loved ones on Thanksgiving with something, Andrea?
The table isn't complete without a cylinder of cranberry sauce that's been carefully removed from the can so you can still see the ridges on it.
Yes, and so but that can't be the only cranberry sauce. You mentioned the one that you have with your onions.
Well, I bake mine, and my sister makes one that I think is awful with oranges in it and orange peel, and it's just nasty.
And she knows your feelings on it?
No, but she's probably not listening.
All right, let's hope for that. We got a note from Amy in Green River, but she's actually lived in Switzerland for 10 years, and she writes that her family hosts a small Thanksgiving with American friends every year, and she told us about two traditions that their group upholds. Here's the first one. One of our first strange traditions is that we have served a whole rabbit instead of a turkey. This is because we raised our own rabbits for food, and turkeys are hard to come by and very expensive at this time of the year. Normally, turkeys and other larger birds are only available around Christmas, in line with the Swiss tradition. The first year, my Swiss husband spent 6 hours outside with a rabbit, woven with twigs in a classic Native American style, slow roasting and marinating it on an open fire in our backyard. Every year is a new recipe to try to improve the outcome, but the original tribute to the American origins was the best. And then, I mean, the number of these people coming out of the woodworks. Here's Amy's second story. Another strange traditional food we eat is a jello mold that my friend Christine brings every year. She grew up in Ohio, and her grandmother made this for Thanksgiving every year, then her mother and now her. The jello mold recipe consists of lime jello, shredded pineapple, cottage cheese, and horseradish. It is, to top it off, prepared in the same mold that her grandmother used. It's totally bizarre, and I liken it to a good single malt scotch. It takes time to appreciate the flavor. Whether or not our group likes the taste of it, we all look forward to it. And then she adds, I love listening to VPR on the weekends. It feels like home, and it brings back sweet memories of our 1770s house in Vermont. Cheers from the Swiss Alps. So, you know, Thanksgiving being celebrated really all over the world, and then people from all of the world bringing their traditions into this American meal. That's one of the things Maria Lisa that I love about it, is that there are so many traditions that you can bring into it that still feel like we're all sort of in the same essence.
Yes, when I grew up, my parents were from Italy, and we used to start the meal with either, not lasagna usually, but sometimes ravioli, homemade ravioli, and sometimes a nice risotto, very simple but really delicious. I have a friend who's Korean who always puts kimchi on her. She serves it at the table at Thanksgiving. And you can, but I think one of the most controversial subjects, which we could spend an entire show on, is stuffing. But I didn't know if I should be the one to bring that up.
Well, given what your role has already been to be, you know, stirring the pot here, why? What's your stuffing?
Well, I just think that you have, if you have kids, you have about a 4-year window of opportunity to change up the stuffing. And then, you know, they sort of decide on what's stuffing, and you're stuck with it if you happen to make one you didn't like. But I'm such a boring traditionalist. I do the bread stuffing with onions and celery, and that's it.
The best one I ever made actually had oysters and apple.
Now, oysters sound so weird to me.
I know, but it was delicious.
In poultry, yeah.
Jim, you're...
The traditionalist, Maria Lisa, saying the oysters sound weird. They were probably at the first
not
Thanksgiving.
Not inside of a turkey.
Well, not inside the... But that is really a strong tradition, the oyster dressing. And it is not something I grew up with, but I've had a couple times, and I think Maria Lisa's right. Stuffing is very controversial. It's not just dry versus moist. It's what kind of bread.
It's in the bird versus out of the bird.
In the bird versus out of the bird. I like a little of both. I will admit I'm a traditionalist too. I like the bag of bread mix, not even fresh. Fresh. But if people do want stuffing ideas, shameless plug, there's a great formula for making stuffing in the November, December Eating Well. And it's sort of a master lesson in stuffing making that lets you customize your own.
Well, I was going to say, you're probably going out to dinner for Thanksgiving, Jim, because what did you have to do for your Thanksgiving meal? You did it like 6 months ago as you're photographing these lovely people celebrating Thanksgiving.
We did. I hate to break the illusion, but we shot this Thanksgiving at a biodynamic farm out in Sonoma in June. So I had a Thanksgiving California style, fresh ham, fresh turkey. It was great. But that's the magazine business. Work ahead.
And Andrea Chessman, just before we let you go, I want to double back because I know that you wanted to offer a suggestion for how to avoid that problem of being the only one in the kitchen who's making everything the day of and not getting to enjoy your family.
Oh, Thanksgiving is best when it's a potluck.
Is that how you do it? You said you're bringing stuff to
the
babies. Yeah,
I'm bringing the vegetables, but someone else is doing the turkey, someone else is doing the pies, and we'll all get together, and that's what's fun.
Well, I hope for all of you listening that you have wonderful Thanksgiving plans, and if you don't have plans, that somebody's holding an orphan's Thanksgiving for you, and you'll get to enjoy the meal. And if not, hey, follow Sister Lorian's advice. Go to the deli and get a few slices of Thanksgiving and enjoy your own personal tradition. Maria Lisa Calta is the author of Barbarians at the Plate, Feeding and Taming the American Family. Andrea Chessman has written many books on cooking and food. Her newest is The Backyard Homestead Book of Kitchen Know-How. Jim Romanoff is longtime food writer and food editor of Eating Well magazine. Thanks to all three of you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy you too, Thanksgiving.
Jade. Thanks.
Coming up, the funniest comedian in Vermont. Well, at least according to the contest that was held this weekend. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. If you were around Burlington this weekend and thought you heard peals of laughter, you weren't mistaken. A new dedicated comedy club has just opened in town, and its first order of business was hosting the second annual Vermont's Funniest Comedian Contest. The preliminary round started on Wednesday, and the contest wrapped up Saturday night when Kendall Farrell of Burlington took the title. And he joins us now. Kendall Farrell, welcome to Vermont Edition, and congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me.
How does it feel to be Vermont's funniest comedian?
It's exciting. I've been working really hard for the last year or so, performing all around the state in dive bars and lots of other small places around the state. So mostly I'm just excited to have been able to be a part of the club's opening because it was such an amazing weekend. And the club owners have been working so hard for so long to grow a scene and provide that scene with a nice home base, if you will.
So for a contest like that, where there were judges coming in who were unfamiliar with the Vermont comedy scene so that they couldn't be swayed by their particular preferences, did you do your normal set or do you develop something specific just for the contest?
I do my normal set. The material that I've been working on is, you know, you can't just throw it out really for one event. So it takes a long time to really hone and refine your jokes to the point where it's something where I would feel comfortable competing with.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I pretty much knew what I was going to do.
And the crowd was good?
Oh, the crowds were amazing. So generous. The room is so perfectly designed that nobody is far away from the stage. And they were so generous and just seemed so excited to have something new to do on the weekend.
So, Kendall, is this like the Genius Awards? You get $1 million for winning and you're not going to have to do any work for the next 10 years?
I don't think so, but it's exciting.
What did you win?
There was a cash prize. I won some gift certificates to some local restaurants. Probably the most exciting thing, though, is just to get to know the judges and get to for them to see you. And I'll get to audition for Just for Laughs now, which is probably the most exciting thing.
That's a comedy festival, and that's part of the winnings, is that you get to audition for that.
Yes, that's the comedy festival in Montreal.
And when you say get to know the judges and get them to know you, that's because you may be able to get bookings out of state now from these judges?
Hopefully. We'll see what happens.
So, Kendall, I understand you're 22, and you've been doing stand-up for just about a year and a half now. What actually got you started?
I've always been really interested when I was a kid. Watch Nick at Night pretty obsessively, Roseanne and The Cosby Show and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, all those kind of shows. And I just got really obsessive about it, and I guess when I had the chance, I moved to Boston for an internship there, and once I was in a bigger city and I had access to more opportunities, I decided to go for it. So I'm excited for the club to be able to provide that for people in Vermont now, because I sort of had to leave started, but there will be a lot of good opportunities for people in state now.
Because of this dedicated comedy club, I mean, you really see this as an avenue and a venue for new comedians to find a way to get their voices heard?
Absolutely, yeah. Nathan and Natalie, the club owners, that they do classes too, and there's an open mic there every Wednesday and every other Sunday now. So they've created a lot of opportunities for people to get stage time, and it's a really exciting time to be on the scene here.
You're actually trying to make this your main career. You're going to make a go of it in comedy and hope that this can be a career for you. So
yeah, I'd like to try.
Do you think you can do that in Vermont?
I'm having fun doing that in Vermont right now. I think eventually, I mean, the feedback I got from the judges was that eventually I'll probably have to move to a bigger market if I want to really make a go of it. But for now, I'm happy here and I love living in Burlington.
When you say you're making a go of it now, are you able to do this without any other augmenting income? I mean, is it really a sustainable career?
Oh, no, I don't make a living off of this right now, certainly.
But you think you could at some point?
This is still very much just a hobby. It's a lot of fun, though.
So, Kendall, what's your advice then for comedians who are looking at you and thinking, oh, my God, you just did all these nights of comedy in front of a huge crowd, in front of judges. You were crowned the funniest comedian in Vermont, but I want to start, and I'm so intimidated. There's no way I could do stand-up.
Yeah. Well, the club offers classes that are great, so I haven't taken them, but I know so many people who have and have had great experiences with it. My advice would be to just get up there and do it.
And
go
your
to
first
an open mic and get it over with if it's something you're interested in.
Was that what it was like for you? Just had to get it over with, or did you kill it on the first night?
Oh, no, of course not. It went terribly. I forgot where I was going halfway through it, and I ended up just like doing a mic drop, basically.
Well, from that first start to the Funniest Comedian Award, Kendall Farrell, he's a comedian living in Vermont, and he won the title of Vermont's Funniest Comedian on Saturday night at the Vermont Comedy Club. Congratulations, Kendall, and thanks for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
VPR's music video project Live from the Fort recently welcomed the band The Grift into the VPR performance studio. The Burlington band describes their sound as somewhere between an electrified Guster and New Order, sans the British accent, and Dave Matthews Band. If you can't quite conjure that, take a listen. Here's The Grift with the song You Will Make a Great Ghost. That song was You Will Make a Great Ghost by The Grift. The band is Clint Bierman on guitar, Jeff Vallone on drums, Peter Day on bass, and Andrew Morose on keys. You can watch the video of their four-song set for VPR's Live from the Fort music video series at vpr.net. And while you're there, you can check out all of the other great acts that have come into Live from the Fort, and you can share your suggestions with the team for who you'd like to hear and see on the series. We're still getting comments from people about our earlier conversation on Thanksgiving meals and traditions and how food is tied into your memories. Amy says on our Facebook page, potato filling is a Pennsylvania Dutch dish with mashed potatoes, onion, celery, butter, egg, and bread cubes mixed together and baked until it has a lovely brown crust. Delicious. Returning to the popular theme of strange colored foods, Wendy says, lime jello marshmallow cottage cheese surprise, a real 1950s staple. And I suppose if you grew up with it, it probably tastes great. And Paul heard my comment earlier that my husband and I don't usually eat a traditional turkey dinner if it's just the two of us home alone on Thanksgiving. And he wrote, steak and broccoli, you poor things. And worse, or perhaps not, you're away from your extended family, but do enjoy. Thanks, Paul. And listeners, if you'd like to continue sharing your Thanksgiving traditions with us, we'd love to hear them on our Facebook page. Maybe you can even share some of the recipes for those bizarre foods that actually are really, really good, or you can just share the memories with us that make your Thanksgiving a tradition worth having every year. Go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page. All right, so tomorrow, Vermont has a new corrections commissioner, Lisa Menard. She takes over at a time when the state's inmate population has dropped to its lowest point in over a decade. We'll talk with the new commissioner about this and about the recent move of Vermont's out-of-state prisoners to a facility in Michigan. You can send your questions or comments for Commissioner Menard to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen live tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gail Rosen, with production assistance from Sarah Matthews. Liam Connors directed the show, and our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.